At the moment in the studio, I have Tony Weeks, economist. And we're going to try and demystify economics a little bit for you. Good morning, Tony. Welcome again.
Good morning, Noel. A pleasure to be here.
Okay, can I ask you, a few things. Do people maybe bastardize the word economics to an extent in the language they use? Politicians, anybody that you've heard, you know, they... sort of say they're talking about economics, but yeah. It doesn't sound like it, so they're using the word in the wrong way.
Well, I'll give you some small example of what I have in mind in offering this discussion this morning. You know, we get a report saying in the newspaper that unemployment has fallen again, more people are in work. Fine, I don't mind that, but is it good news or bad? I'm not sure I can tell, simply by looking at the numbers. It depends what kind of work they're doing, whether they're being decently treated in the work they're doing. It's not some kind of unstable employment. And does it fit their needs and talents?
Okay.
You know, because we all have different talents, and shoving people into doing things which don't suit their aptitudes isn't necessarily a very good idea. So I'm not complaining about people being put back into employment. I'm just asking, well, what about the quality? Never mind the numbers.
And then the same type of language Tony has used, I mean, it's the thing that I talk about in the program ad nauseum, because it drives me crazy when they talk about the minimum wage in this country, average wage, I should say, not minimum, average wage in this country. And they talk in the 40,000. I mean, we all know that's not realistic. And even one of the candidates in the election the other night was asked why she said she was on an average wage, 47,000. She said, "Well, that's average, and it's not." So is that a sort of misrepresentation as well of economics, when people give figures in the wrong that way as they do with employment?
Figures just give us like a sort of preliminary view. I mean, it's like going to the doctor and you give your symptoms, or the doctor takes a few tests. But we're not drilling down, as the doctor is meant to do. Actually, drilling down isn't an appropriate metaphor for talking about medical consultations. But, I mean, the intention is for the doctor to look at a set of information that he or she has and come up with a diagnosis and come up with a treatment. But when we deal only with the numbers, we're just skating the surface. That's my view.
Yeah, a lot of spin doctoring going on. I mean, look, it was language. One thing I wrote down, because it drives me crazy when I hear them talking about fiscal space, and this sort of new language that they have out there, sort of that people look and think that they know what other people are talking about who are talking economics, but you wonder, do they, and where do they come up with these words?
Well, there's a big problem of what I'm referring to generally when I'm invited to speak on things as economic illiteracy. I think you and I possibly have come across this between us before. I'm not being rude or impolite when I say it exists. I'm simply saying that there's a sense in which we accept what we're told without this questioning I've tried to give some information about earlier on in our conversation here. Words are important. I mean, another word that comes to mind is competition. It sounds like a good idea, but then you've got to ask yourself, who is competing with whom, and on what basis? You know, you can't have a big multiple supermarket chain. You can't have them competing with, say, a small, decent retail shop, corner shop, that's that person's livelihood. The other stuff is board of directors, possibly in London, possibly elsewhere. So these words, I get back to this phrase, need to be unpacked. Now, I think one aspect, again, I make the point, I think I've made it in the before to you, that without some gentle introduction to the ideas and themes within economics offered to the general public are left in a state of uncertainty about what they're being told. And the only way they can make a judgment, I think, is by looking at what the politicians or the media say. And if this is good news, well, then we have to somehow think, well, must be good news if they say so. But it doesn't feel like good news. And this is a view I'm getting a fair bit. Ireland is doing well, somebody said to me yesterday, isn't it? And yet their background to that was a sense of, I'm not sure what that means, because it doesn't feel like it's doing well to me. And that means let's get down to the details a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if people are working, all right, what kind of work are they doing? Are they being well paid for it? Is it some kind of zero-hours contract? Do they know, are there enough income to meet their basic family needs? I'm not talking about, you know, extravagance here. I'm talking mm-hmm. about the basic needs.
Mm-hmm.
Or are they having to go into debt?
Okay, and you look at the housing situation, you look at the health situation mm-hmm. and all sorts of things, and there's contradictions there right across the way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, a lot of, I mean, if you take down the ordinary people when they're listening to any sort of economics, I would just remind people as well that the university community project still goes on, and you give talks in Coolock Library, but you're telling me you've expanded that as well,
mm-hmm.
just to get that out again and again. So
yes.
that's an annual event, is it, down in...
Yes. Just to
still
digress a little bit, the Comi University programme, sponsored by Maynooth University,
mm-hmm.
Has been doing now this for, what, 5-6 years?
Yes,
something
indeed,
like
yeah.
that, I think. And there are components in it, and one of the components, which is the one I contribute to, is on a sort of demystification of economics. And this idea that we need to have these citizens' forums where we can have some structured discussion, not intending to make things more difficult, but if anything, to strip away some of the language and technical terms that are being used.
Mm-hmm.
Also ask the question, well, what is the economy for? A simple question, but it's not a question that's often asked.
Mm-hmm.
We just assume, well, it's there, like the weather's there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't question the weather. Well, you can't, but you might question some of the things that are done. But if you haven't the language or the confidence to do the questioning, you're lost.
And
as they use the phrase, I think, somewhere, it becomes a black box. You know, you're just told this is what it is and we have to go.
Okay, well, you went to college, study economics, Tony, and I mean, is it evolving all the time? So kids now going?
Well, now there's another interesting topic.
Okay.
I did my studies, undergraduate studies in Manchester, a city for which I still have, for obvious reasons, mm-hmm. great affection. And 2 years ago, almost, I think it was now, I went back to a book launch, and the story behind this book launch is a group of undergraduate students, probably around 2012, 2013, began their first year studies, and they were in the Faculty of Economics, and they went home after the first time, they went, Christmas it would have been, I guess, and the families and friends were saying, well, you're doing economics, can you explain to me anything about the economic problems of our time? And they found they couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And this started to create a kind of unease among them. And they went back to the teachers, the faculty, and they said, what you're teaching us doesn't make sense in the context of the world we're living in. And the faculty's answer was, well, that's your problem, not ours. So what they did was something really very ingenious and must have taken a lot of courage. They invited speakers in for a sort of private series of seminars. People from other places, other institutions, other universities in some cases, to give them an alternative point of view based in the economy of the real world.
Mm-hmm.
That was very successful, but as I said already, it would have taken a lot of courage. Now, 2 years ago, I'm back to the way I began this story, they launched a book, and it was called The Econocracy. And it sets out in three stages or three steps what was wrong with what they were being taught, what the improvements would be, and why this business of public understanding is so important. And it's been an inspiration to me. And those young people have moved on, and in different ways they're trying to influence what the undergraduate education in economics is now about.
So there's lots of conversations out there with older economists like yourself and the new generation coming up.
A book in Hodges Figures yesterday afternoon, browsing around there, and I didn't find much change in the standard first year and undergraduate text.
Okay, there you go.
That's the kind of thing the guys and girls in Manchester were complaining about is still there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that needs to be some changes right across the board, probably across the world, and Manchester at the start of it.
But it's happening. Part of it. Okay. It is happening.
It's good.
Yes.
It's good.
It's spread around the colleges in Britain and other places in continental Europe, in North America.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose you were talking about the multinationals and stuff like that, or any sort of a big business, just to get back to the other thing. And I'm sure that if, as an economist, if you sit down and you look at a government, I think any government, I don't think you can sort of pick any government. Uh-huh. I think any government in any country, and when you look at the Minister for the Exchequer, and he has no background in it at all. If you had a business, you wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
You wouldn't put someone in who knew nothing really about what you were going to be talking about. So why does that happen? Why do people in government not do the same as people in business if they want to have any... aspect of success, do you think?
Well, I can't know. I've never been active for myself in politics, so it's a bit hard to say what constitutes how political.
But you can understand why people on the ground are mystified.
Yeah. But then we go back to what have the advisors studied and how well did they understand it?
Mm-hmm.
And was it, in fact, then the kind of thing that might have worked in some way in the last century? We're into a new century now, although you've got to pinch yourself at times to realise how far we're in, and to realise that the world has changed enormously. And the issues of our time are not the issues of what we went through in the latter half of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're running on something, I mean, subjects like medicine are upgrading themselves constantly because the new discoveries, new inventions, new procedures are making the science of medicine, or the science that underlies medicine, a good deal more effective.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't seem to me to be happening. Economics is about, you know, crawling along the frontiers of knowledge, as somebody once said, and adding a little bit here and there, rather than a radical rethink.
Yeah, but the medics is unfortunately tied to the economics because they need the money to function.
Yeah.
And in lots of cases it's... it's the office staff and that type of area where all the money is wasted to an extent. That's the word out there as well anyway. So there's lots of mistakes being made across the board. So how can we get the message to people now that economics, that they should sort of study it in some sort of way if they want to understand it?
Well, one obvious way is to look out for the Common University, which isn't just about economics. It's... the four modules within Com University, there's politics generally, there's sometimes philosophy, there's sometimes history, which enables you to put where we are now into a sort of context, and this bit I do. And over the last year or so, it's spread certainly within this city. The first time I did somebody here in Coolock, it's now over the other side of the river, in Ballyfermot and Walkinstown. And Maynooth, the Department of Adult and Community Education, are certainly interested in rolling out this kind of programme. And it's very much, I know I shouldn't maybe be cautious in mentioning the Irish presidency election taking place today, but it's the kind of thing that Michael D. Higgins has spoken out, the need for confident, well-informed or better-informed citizens, if they're to play the part. And I like that word, citizen. Not taxpayer, not consumer, not customer, citizen. Mm-hmm.
But if they learn it, can we change? I mean, from the ground up, can we change things the way they are? Would we have to move into politics? Because that's where the power lies in any sort of knowledge of economics. And they seem to be just making a complete hames of it. Across the world,
absolutely.
It's not just Ireland.
And Brexit and Trumpism came out of that, making the hames, as you say, of it, yeah. Well... we're back to this word confidence, I think. If you don't understand the language in which economics is being, or the economy is being discussed, you find it very hard to get the challenge. And even if you did, you'd need to know that it's not something set in concrete. It's been changed in the past and can be changed again. And citizens' movement have been very much a part of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, citizens' movements have generally been the thing that's made change in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back briefly, I suppose, just about 100 years, the movement for giving votes to women was a citizens' movement.
Mm-hmm.
Responded rather than the other way around.
Yeah, I was just looking at talking when I was talking about fiscal space and language earlier on and reading you through some of the text here. And one thing I often hear people saying when they hear it on the news, the GDP.
Yeah.
And if you said most people, if you asked them what it meant, they wouldn't know. So it's this sort of language as well. I suppose it's wise to figure out what is involved in economics. So you have to learn the language as well, yeah. I imagine.
Well, you're back with GDP to another number. And there again, poke around a bit. I'll try and understand what lies beneath the number. And if the gross domestic product, as to give it its full title, is growing, who is getting the benefit of that growth? And again, is it growth that delivers something of value for the times we're in? Or is it just growth of anything that happens to leave a financial mark in some way? And that's all GDP is measuring, the financial marks of the things we buy and the services we use.
I often wonder, I was reading somewhere recently about a professor who who was talking about people always going on about the good old days and all that sort of thing and how great it was and stuff like that. I mean, I've often said it myself. 30, 40 years ago in Dublin alone, we had hospitals on every corner. I know people were poor and that sort of thing, but we still had medical care and the essentials that we had and stuff like that. But he contradicts all this and said we're better off today, much, much, than we ever were before. He didn't go too much into how we figured out. Of course, he said we're living longer and stuff like that. But I'd question that myself if we are better off. What would you think yourself? Do you think as a world we are better off as the technology shows?
I'm not sure we
us?
Are better off financially or in terms of the things that really matter, the things that constitute what I would prefer to call the decent society as distinct from the state of the economy. And the other thing that's happening, which I find some encouragement from, is the word utopia is being reclaimed. In the sense, not that we'll ever get to utopia, but why, when we have all these possibilities, are we somehow walking around feeling dissatisfied, discontented, dismayed, or whatever else this word you can think of? Shouldn't we be striving to create, you're going to use the phrase again, the decent society. What does it consist of? What do we want? It's not all about treating ill health and injuries. It's about a healthy environment in which we can live.
As an economist yourself, has it has improved your life with the knowledge? When you see it going on, would it depress you in any way? Because I think it would me.
I take comfort from the fact. I mean, as you know and you've mentioned, I think, I was an academic economist in a university in England which claims to have, and justifiably, I shouldn't be cautious about this, and say that... that claim is justified overall, the range of studies that are on offer there. I think I'm now trying to repent, because what we were teaching and demanding from our students is exactly the same as the students in Manchester rebelled against 4 or 5 years ago. It's a narrow concept of what the economy is. It doesn't branch out into what is the economy for. And that's what's missing. And I think modest efforts like myself, but more particularly of these young people in Manchester who, having completed their studies, are now going out into the real world, let's say, and doing what's been done here for a little longer through the Comm University programme.
Okay, I'm going to mention the dreadful word Brexit. Do you think that the narrow view that people have of economics was responsible maybe for the vote and the way it went?
There were some very good things done by the European Union, I think, in the early stages, until maybe around the enlargement in 2004. I want to be cautious, it's a very big subject. I'm very concerned about the way the people of Greece were treated. There is a lot of faults understood and recognised, but nothing done about them, in the way the euro has been structured. Again, that would take longer than we have at the moment, I think. So I was, when the referendum came up, a reluctant remainer. But that was in the hope, I think, we could get round to some kind of reform collectively, because there are other countries feeling like some people in Britain do. But in the end, I think, if you think about some of the depressed urban areas of England, you can see how people resenting what they felt had been attributed to Europe. So get rid of Europe, or get rid of the European Union, and everything will be great. But they've been misled all round, I think. And yes, no referendum was never the way to settle the issue. Okay. And not certainly not with a such
there wasn't enough talk about it, really. It just seemed to come out of the blue, and everyone just...
Prime Minister at the time had the dogs of the United Kingdom Independence Party barking round his heels, and I don't think he was a guy who had the confidence to stand up to them somehow.
Yeah, but he just put us out there, and he wasn't long before he was gone. So I mean,
well, he was gone.
He didn't see
he made a mess of
the consequences of it afterwards. Just as you said, it's a big, huge subject, and it's been what 2.5 years now, and they seem to be still floundering a little bit. Do you think it would go back to a vote? Do you think that it would have to maybe take an Irish little bent on it and sort of say, listen, let's vote again on
cautious
this?
Cautious, because supposing it came out again and say 55% in favour of Remain, that still leaves 45% of people who feel disenfranchised, dissatisfied, or whatever the word would be. They claimed they wanted Brexit. Now they're going to, apparently, assuming the government took the vote outcome of the vote seriously, they would be feel the resentment would remain. No, the British government has backed us into a corner, I think, and the effect it'll have on the partition of Ireland is still not clear. And the effect it might have on the future of independent Scotland is not clear either. And Scotland is doing, is used its devolved powers, I think, with far better, put them to far better use than has been done by the British government for the whole of this rather disunited kingdom.
And what they were afraid of is that a lot of people, other European companies would sort of follow suit, and or maybe they're just waiting to see what the outcome would be, and I'll wait a year or two and then maybe they'd follow suit. They're afraid of the domino effect as well, aren't they?
I guess they are, but what again, when something like this happens, it would be up to the European Union to start asking, well, where does this discontent come from? And several years of austerity have not been any help in giving people a feel-good factor.
Because it seems to be a worldwide a problem, Tony. I mean, the same thing right across the world. Greed, I mean, going back to Margaret Thatcher at the time, everyone sort of puts her up on a pedestal to the extent of an examination of greed. But it's right across the world, homelessness and medical problems and really very few people with all the wealth. I mean, is that, do you think, will that change? And people learning about the economics and stuff like that, can they make that change or force that change? Or will we be back on the streets in the old-fashioned way?
The origin of what you're describing, Noel, is a concept and set of ideas called neoliberalism. It's only very recently, I think, that this word has started to pass into common usage. It was always somewhat concealed, I think, and even maybe deliberately, I don't know. It started to come out a little bit more. It's the word we use to describe all these discontents and misplaced policy objectives and so on. And it's been a very pernicious doctrine, and we can see how it evolved from Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan in the early 1980s through to deregulation, privatisation and so on. And it's, and maybe the important thing is, the market will deal with any of the problems we have. We don't need government intervention. We only need the market. Because if the market spots an opportunity, as with the need to do something about climate change, for example, the market will move in and do it. No, the market needs to be guided and have an enabling legislation and some policies and a policy framework in which it could move in that direction.
Well, you wonder about it subversely to the extent, I mean, we mentioned Reagan and we mentioned Thatcher, and you can take anybody in any government now, but I'm talking about the Minister for Exchequers know nothing about economics and stuff like that, but all these figureheads that we talk about, it's who's around them and who's advising them. Isn't that really the problem, where the information and where the advice is coming from and why? We're geared in that particular way.
We're into a difficult task here. I wouldn't deny that for one moment. If we're to change, and I think we must, this question of a new economy isn't something that's vaguely desirable. It's something that's necessary if we're to not head into some, as distinct from utopia, to head into something we might call dystopia. In fact, we're, many people would say we're
bordering
away
on it.
There now.
Yeah.
There are alternatives. There are citizens' movements. There's people still feel, I think, a little uncertain about it. There's been a citizens' income movement, basic income movement now in this city for several years. And yet it's those of us who meet are those of us who are already convinced that it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
We need more discussion we need, and we're back again to this question of economics for the people, that's distinct from economics for a certain educational elite, of which I might, I suppose, in all honesty say I'm part of that elite in a sense, but I'm trying now to be something of the prophet to go out and do something at more grassroots level.
But more people that are in the genre you're talking about, including yourself, are the ones that are changing now. They're the ones that are leading the way as well.
I mean, we're trying to make change.
It, yeah.
We're trying to encourage people to think more deeply and more critically, yeah.
And even, I mean, they've come out of universities, lots of them have gone into branches of entertainment, a lot of them comedians and actors, and the message is out there that we need to change in the course of what they're doing. And a lot of people think it sounds contradictory because they have money, why don't they use it? But they do, they use what they have in the way that they use it for change, and I find it for the good. Would you agree with that?
There are opportunities, I think, in which however modest our savings or our modest financial reserves can be, we can put that money to some use which will meet the issues of our time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movement which has still got some way to go in this part of Ireland, I think. But in the north, I had to put some of my own modest financial resources to a project called the Drumlin Wind Energy. It's a cooperative. It's owned by those who have put the money into it. And just purely for the record, the AGM was a few weeks ago, and the rate of dividend was declared by the directors to be 5.5%.
Wow.
None of that money is going to pay fat cats. None of that money is going to be used for excessive expenses. It's a modest citizens initiative, and it's working, and it's delivering one of the needs of our time, which is renewable energy.
Okay.
And it's done it sensitively with respect to the visual impact which people do feel about wind turbines.
Maybe you should do that right across the board. Just to finish off, I just want to say that it's not a contradiction in terms of what we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. It just brought a big laugh to my face when I saw the news the other night, and the big lottery in America, and some guy won $1.6 billion, and the queues into the shops prior to it. Down the street, and you're going, we're going crazy. But our politicians are doing the same thing. We don't talk in hundreds or thousands anymore. Mm. We're talking in millions.
Yeah.
And that confuses everything even more.
Yeah.
And the people themselves can be responsible for what's happening as well. I mean, they might think they have no power, but they do have. One thing you'd always have is a vote.
We need a new politics and maybe a new kind of politician. And you say, how do we get there? Well, maybe people cast the vote too much on traditional lines, whether it's Sinn Féin and DUP on the one hand, to quote from my own part of Ireland, or whether it's the two long-established parties, 100 years, I suppose, now in this part of Ireland. We need politics and people who understand the issues of our time, not simply a membership of a party.
Okay, that's a good note to end on, Tony.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And people should look up university. People look up university, the Maynooth University, Community Project, and for all the details of that. It happens in Coolock and all over the places, and it's spreading a little bit. Anyway, thank you very much, Tony.
Thank you, Noel, yes.